Welcome to the Money Advantage Podcast, empowering business owners with the permission to think differently about money so that you can consciously choose to live a meaningful and fulfilled life now. Our passion is making money simple, fun, and doable, helping you feel great about your money and getting your money working for you so you can thrive.
Hi, and welcome back to the Money Advantage Podcast. We're your hosts, Rachel Marshall and Bruce Wehner. Welcome, Bruce.
Morning, Rachel. How are you?
I'm great. How are you today?
Great. Let's get this going. We're going to have another great podcast.
Awesome. Well, right now I want to kick us off. We're in the middle of a series on saving. So in the last episode of this series called Why the Wealthy Love Cash Part 1, you'll want to go ahead and grab that episode if you have not listened already. We discussed many of the ideas and philosophy around why savings is not only relevant, but crucial to your financial success. It really creates this peace of mind so that you're able to operate from a mindset of abundance and confidence. You can make better decisions. You can have clarity. You also have guarantees, which give you more options. Now, when you have savings, you are not desperate. You're able to focus your time and energy on the right clients in your business, the right activities in your life, the right investments that align with your investor DNA, and you're able to create value more effectively through your life and business. If you have setbacks or failures or unexpected expenses or emergencies, you're able to rebound because cash is king, especially in a crisis. We discussed a lot of topics as well, specifically that some of the strategies that are used that don't work to create the same type of confidence and peace of mind. And one of those is budgeting, and another is paying off debt. And sometimes those strategies can be used to achieve the same financial confidence, but they don't create the same confidence that having savings creates. We talked about saving in an opportunity fund because opportunity looks for liquidity, and people who have liquidity are able to seize those opportunities. We also talked about saving for fun and just really being able to have a great lifestyle, enjoy your life, have no regrets on spending money to really enjoy life, and then also saving for other things like future taxes and inflation. So we started with the why of savings. We are familiar, Bruce, I know you are familiar as well, with Simon Sinek and the Start With Why concept.
Yes.
And the whole idea is that in anything that we do in life, we have a philosophy, whether we realize it or not. We really want to start with that why. So today we're continuing to flesh out the why of savings. We're not just going to talk about the philosophy today. We're going to connect that back to some relatable people and their real life stories and examples to help build more relevance and meaning for you. We're going to talk through a few examples of the ultra wealthy being comfortable in being in cash and not having to be invested all the time. So Bruce, as we get into this, I really want our listeners today to have this idea that you and I have both become aware of, and I think more people are, of this idea of metacognition or thinking about your thinking. And I think a lot of times people try to jump straight to what's the right investment for me? What's the right strategy? And before we do any of that, we really want to make sure we have the right philosophy in place and really understand our why and the purpose of our money. I know that you use a thinking exercise with your clients as you work through that idea of what's the purpose of your money. Can you share a little bit about that with us as we get started?
Sure. We try to simplify things. Clients often bring in statements and they say they can't figure it out and they don't know what's going on and they need help to kind of compartmentalize things. And so we use a financial picture that is a one-page diagram of money that's sitting in a taxable position, which would be things that you have to put on your tax return that year. Such as savings account, money market, CDs, brokerage accounts, if you have a checking account that pays interest. Tax-deferred money, so the ones that most of our listeners know about are IRAs and 401ks and 403bs and 457s and qualified annuities, SEP plans, and other business-related plans. And then tax advantage plans. That can be tax-free, such as Roth IRAs, equity in your house, municipal bonds, and life insurance. And then at the bottom, we start talking about how they're tax they're taxed on that money, what their cash flow is, money coming in and money going out, and then the money going out, what's it going out to on the far right-hand side, the banking of it. And when we do that, we actually start talking to them about the purpose of the money. So if somebody has money in a brokerage account, a savings account, we say to them, well, what's the purpose of this money? And it's amazing because a lot of people look at you like, well, what do you mean? What's the purpose of this money? And in some cases they say, well, I'm supposed to save money, right? And then I ask them about their 401k or their tax deferred money. Well, what's the purpose of this money? And then people look at you funny again. They're like, well, it's for retirement. And then you get over to the far side. And if there's tax advantage money that can eventually be tax free if it's done properly, you ask them, well, what's the purpose of this money? And, you know, you get different answers in that column because a lot of people don't know equity in your home is tax free, or they don't know about municipal bonds. They don't know about life insurance growing tax free and a death benefit being tax free. The only one they really know about is if they have it is a Roth IRA because somebody has told them to do a Roth IRA because it grows tax free. And then we go down and we ask them about the purpose of the loans, the banking that they do, whether it's a mortgage, whether it's a credit card debt, student loan debt, or whether it is a car loan or any kind of other loan. We say, well, what was the purpose of taking out that loan? Sometimes people, example, would say, well, I took out a house loan because that's the only way I could buy a house. Other people say, well, I took out a house loan because I know it's tax deductible. Other people say, well, I took out a house loan because I know that it is a good way to use other monies that I could have paid off my house for other opportunities.
So Bruce, I want to jump in on something you're saying right here. That's kind of the point of what I want our listeners to grab onto, is that every financial decision that we make, whether we realize it or not, has a philosophy behind it.
Yes.
So Bruce, as you're talking about, I took this loan because it was better than paying cash in that particular case, or I didn't have the cash. Mm-hmm. But there's a philosophy that you have that guides all of your decision making. And I think it's really important to step back from the choices that we make and say, what is the way that I'm thinking about money? Why am I making this particular choice? And as we look at those, the why behind our financial decisions, it helps us to gain more clarity on how we can make the whole financial picture work together most effectively. And that's really where we're going with this whole savings conversation. So I just wanted to articulate that there, Bruce.
Yeah. And behavioral science has become a very hot topic in the financial services area. And what's interesting is they're finding out that people make decisions not always rationally, even when they're trying to make them based on numbers. And that is because of previous experiences that you have had. So you have a mindset about this. Most of the time, it's an unconscious mindset. So when you ask a person what the purpose of the money is, what you're trying to help them do is bring up a conscious mindset about it, not just an unconscious mindset about it. And when that happens, people start to see for themselves that, well, maybe my underlying unconscious mindset is holding me back from making decisions that my conscious mind would like to make. And they really then start to wake up to see some of the decisions are in contradiction of what they're actually trying to accomplish. An example would be that I've seen recently when I was asking a person what their biggest fear was with their money, and they said, well, my biggest fear is that we're not going to have enough money to actually pay for my child's college expenses. And I said, well, earlier we talked about your mortgage and you're paying double payments into your mortgage. So you're losing control of that money. That money could be placed somewhere to use for college expenses in the future. And they just kind of sat back in the chair and they said, yeah, I never realized that. Here I'm worried about paying for college, and yet I'm doing something on with my mortgage that's actually causing me to not be able to save for college. And you know, you and I or other people that are listening to the podcast might say, well, that's pretty obvious. But when you're actually, it's pretty obvious to people that are aware of it, but people that aren't aware of those kind of things, it's not obvious to them at all unless you start asking questions.
Oh, absolutely. And I use the same financial picture process with any clients that I work with, and have learned a lot through the process of working with you, Bruce. And I think the most powerful piece of this that you as a listener can apply even today as we're going through this discussion is thinking about your thinking regarding money. And so bringing some ideas that maybe you've had about savings or holding cash into the forefront, where maybe you've had an unconscious idea that has directed your behavior with that particular idea of saving or holding cash, and bringing that into conscious awareness and saying, what do I really think about this, and why, and what is the purpose that I want to achieve with my money, and how does this fit into my own personal paradigm? And so that's kind of the lens that I want you to have on as you're listening to this podcast today.
Yeah. And I just thought about another example is we are creatures of our surrounding. And often it's, we learn, supposedly we learn kind of our mindset from age 3 through age 10 or 12. And we obviously we learn it from the people we're around most, as our parents. And I had a client that unfortunately his mother had died, and she passed along to him $200,000+ in a CD, and he had left it in his savings account for close to 7 years. And when I asked him what the purpose of that money was, he said, well, my mother left it to me, so I'm going to leave it to my children. Mm-hmm. Well, what you have to understand as a parent, I believe, or anybody that has some influence over another young person, is they are seeing your modeling of a particular behavior. So what they are probably being told is, now, this money is being passed. I'm leaving you this money because my mother left me this money, and I'm going to leave it to you. And even if you don't say, I want you to leave it to your children, that mindset is going to be passed along, and that money is just going to get passed, and it's not going to do anything for any generation. So mm-hmm. You're really passing along mindsets to people when they're young. And that's where we get our behavioral decisions that we make about money is from modeling from people that we see. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't make sense to save mm-hmm. that $200,000. What I think would make more sense, and this is what we're doing at E3 Wealth, is we are actually getting generations together in the same room before they pass away and say, what do you want the purpose of this money to be for the next generation? And then when they pass that along, then the next person, obviously, that's going to be infinite. So we then take the next generation and get it in the same room, and we talk about where that money came from, what the parent wants to do with that money in the future, and then the mindset is passed along differently as you go down the legacy ladder.
Bruce, that's fantastic. I want to pull out two points of that and use that as a transition and a bridge into our first person that we want to talk about as an ultra wealthy person who is using cash. But you mentioned about how we pass on our own mindset to our children. Actually, what you said was that we received our mindset from what our parents did, mm-hmm. not as much necessarily from what they said. But that also then translates to those of us who have kids. I have a 6-year-old daughter, and I have become increasingly aware of what I'm handing down to her is not only what I'm doing, but also what I'm saying. And I think it's very, very important then to be aware of our own mindset and why we make the choices that we make and how our language impacts that, because we want to pass on healthy financial perspective to our kids. And the more conscious that we can be around our own financial why and our meaning about money and our own philosophy, the more effectively we can pass that on to our kids instead of just going through the motions and being unconscious with the way that we handle our money and hoping that our kids get what they get from it. We really want to be very intentional about teaching them money. And so because of that, we have to bring it into our own conscious awareness. The other piece that you had brought full circle was that watching what somebody does as opposed to just what they say is very, very important. And so I want to use this as an example. Many of you are probably familiar of Susie Orman. She has had an interview in February of 2007. And this was a conversation that she had with someone who's interviewing her about where she's personally storing her cash. And I want to just share a little bit of the details of that. So she said, or the question was, how much are you worth these days? Now, granted, this was many years ago, but she said about $25 million. Now, so we're talking specifically about people who have ultra wealthy perspective, people who have a lot of cash, who are in a position of being ultra wealthy that we want to model. So the question then was, do you enjoy spending money? She said, oh yes, my greatest pleasure is still flying private. I spend between $300,000 to $500,000, depending on my year, on flying private. The next question was, so what do you do with the rest of your money? She said, I save it and build it in municipal bonds. I buy zero coupon municipal bonds, and all the bonds I buy are AAA rated and insured so that even if the city goes under, I get my money. I take a little lower interest rate to make sure my bonds are 100% safe and sound. The next question was, do you play the stock market at all? And she answered, I have $1 million in the stock market because if I lose $1 million, I personally don't care. So there was a lot said kind of behind this conversation. And one specific thing was that she has a lot more in her wealth capacity than maybe many of us do. And she's saying she really looks to have her money invested where it's safe and sound, and that she invests in the stock market with money she can afford to lose. So I want to kind of use that as a springboard to talking about, Bruce, what is it that you see that she is doing that we can model?
Well, I think a lot of times when people listen to podcasts like this, or they listen to the Today Show, and they're trying to figure out what these experts are saying, the message they get across, or they try to get across, is the only way that you can be successful is to save your money and place it in places where you can't trust yourself. So you need to get it out of sight, out of mind, and also you need to give up things in order for you to save this. And a lot of times, you know, you read things about, you know, people, you need to take a bologna sandwich to work, or you need to wear your shoes until they have holes in them, and so on and so forth. Well, I think that one of the first things that I take away from this article, which was in 2007, is that Susie Orman, who is a big believer in personal responsibility and saving, and yet she's spending up to $500,000 a year in 2007 in private flying, and that is because, one, she enjoys it, so she does things that she enjoys, but also she has decided, and it makes perfect business sense for her to spend money that she wouldn't have to spend because it will keep her fresher, it will allow her to be more efficient, so on and so forth. And so you have to evaluate in your own personal economy, what is the purpose of the spending, and will it actually enhance your life going forward? The other thing that you see is that she's putting her money into very safe AAA bonds. Now, I'd like to see where she puts the rest of her money besides the stock market, because when you put money in AAA bonds, they are tied up and you lose control of it. We talk to our clients about three things that you can achieve with your money. You can achieve growth, you can achieve liquidity, or you can achieve safety. But it's very difficult to get more than two out of three of those things. So in her example, she's getting growth and she's getting safety, but she's not getting liquidity. Mm-hmm. When she puts money into her into the stock market, which an interesting thing, a back note of this is one of the things that Susie preaches is that you should be putting your money into well-diversified mutual funds. And that's where she's telling people that they should invest their money. And yet she's got a very small percentage of her money in it. When you put it into mutual funds, if you put it in a brokerage account, it definitely over the history has grown over a long period of time. And there's liquidity because you could sell it the next day, but there's no safety in that situation. So when I look at these, when I look at where people are putting their money, I look at what is the purpose of them saying what they're saying and what are they trying to get out of it. And I always go back to growth, liquidity, and safety. And the big thing that I think we always talk about too is who's in control of the money.
Bruce, I really like what you brought to the table because I really do think that we want to, again, model the people who are successful, not necessarily just what the status quo financial advice is because we heard it from someone who even maybe seemed credible, but it's much more powerful to watch what people are actually doing. And that's just a really powerful model to follow. Sometimes maybe a little bit more difficult to find out, but it's and research, but it's really much more valuable to us.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to take this then into another story. We're going to talk about Mark Cuban for a little bit. Bruce, do you want to share anything about who Mark Cuban is for anyone who might not be familiar? I'm sure many people have heard about him. I know he's got a worth of about $3.4 billion. He owns the Dallas Mavericks. He's a star of Shark Tank. Is there anything else you want to share about him just as a person as we're starting?
Yeah, I think, you know, Mark Cuban is a big personality. That's his persona. But I think when you really read about him and start to learn about his life, is that he really isn't so much, that's kind of his outward personality, but he really is kind of a person that likes to be conservative in nature, even though he's an entrepreneur. And you'll actually see that on Shark Tank a lot of times where he will be the one that will not get into a particular bidding war with certain people because it has to be just the exactly right type of deal with him. And he asks a lot of questions about the person's own personality. And as it said in this article, that he said to himself, "I wasn't greedy. I don't need more money. I need to be able to enjoy my money." And he's another one that does enjoy his money. But what he has done now, he's done a little bit more of a complicated protection that really is way too complicated to try to do over a podcast. But he's done like a put and calls against his money going down. So he's put like stop gaps on some bets on his stocks going down and going up. So what he's doing is he's giving up some of the high side of the stocks to make sure that they don't go down past a certain amount before they are actually sold or hedged against.
Mm-hmm.
So he's looking at saying, why do I need, I made a good amount of cash. Why do I need to take any more chances with my money? I just want to protect my money.
Yeah.
He also has nearly 50% of his net worth in cash or very liquid securities.
Yeah, I was going to comment a little bit on that amount that he's holding in cash. So there was a couple of different interviews, and we'll have all of the links in the show notes and on the website as well. But he specifically said, unlike the jittery markets today, cash allows an investor to take advantage of new opportunities and doesn't buck to the whim of high-frequency trading and fickle decisions. So he mentioned that he had more than 50% of his portfolio in cash, and he said that that allows him to be able to sleep better at night. There's also kind of a video connected with one of the articles, and he talked about the stock market. I thought this was really interesting. He said the stock market used to be a way to facilitate getting capital into companies, and he said it's no longer that at all. He said now it's a platform for hackers to go in there and try to create ways to generate cash. And so he said there's a lot of risk that's in the stock market inherently, because we don't know, we don't understand, we can't qualify or quantify all of that risk. And so getting ahead of the data is challenging. And he said he recognizes that risk, and that's why he has money in other places. He said having cash creates this transactional opportunity when things aren't going your way. So he's not afraid to be invested, but he also has a tremendous amount of his portfolio in cash that creates that transactional opportunity, he said. And then as he was asked how much he had in cash, he said more than 50%. He said, if you have cash, he said you'd be an idiot to put it into the stock market, he said, because you can use it for things like getting discounts and also being able to pay off debt and other loans, to pay off debt and be so much further ahead so you can sleep at night. So he's really articulating this reason to be able to sleep better at night, this confidence, this assurance, this strong foundation beneath him. So while he's putting some of his money at risk and he's using a complicated strategy, as Bruce was mentioning, and he knows what he's doing there, he's also at the same time keeping a good portion of that in a safe position for him.
Yeah, in the article, it actually says that after he made his first couple million, he actually did trade in the stock market about 20 years ago, I believe it was. And then he did triple his money, but he feels like those days are gone because of the automatic trading, because of the amount of information that is available to everybody now, that it's hard to stay in front of information that you used to be able to just work hard to get that information. But now because of social media and the internet and so on and so forth, it's just available to so many people that it's very difficult to actually get a competitive advantage in the stock market situation. He's also, and I remember, Rachel, when I was listening to a podcast several years ago, when I first understood, I believe, what he's talking about is I remember the exact moment when I turned onto my street in front of my house where I realized that why would I take cash and invest it in a company that I don't even know anything about the people involved, about the board of directors that are trying to run the company, about the CEO that is only worried about the next 90 days because that's when the quarterly reports are going to be come out and that's when the stock prices are probably going to be determined. And he or she or the board of directors not necessarily looking for the long term because they're thinking about getting out or retiring. I don't know anything about that. Why wouldn't I take my money and invest it in myself or at the very least somebody that I know personally into a business, because I can see the day-to-day activities. I know that particular person and I can control the situation at any time I want it. It's funny, I remember the exact place where I stopped my car to continue to listen to that podcast when I first understood that concept that Mark Cuban's talking about.
You know, that's awesome. And it sounds like it was very transformative for you in your own personal life as you really were thinking about where do I want to put my money that's the safest, that I have the most control. And we really call that being an active investor. So at the very least, what we want to encourage you to think about as you're listening to this podcast is how can I put my money in places that I know and I control and I have say in how the performance goes forward, whether it grows, whether we make certain decisions. And the more power of control that you have in that business, the more leverage you'll have as an active investor, the more control you have. And that gives you stronger sense of confidence and less risk as well. The opposite side of the spectrum would just be saying, well, just invest in mutual funds and a basket of stocks and bonds and hope everything works out, while everyone outside of your control makes all of their own decisions. So I really appreciate you sharing that story, Bruce, and how it impacted and affected you personally as you really said, wow, I don't want to be that passive investor. I really want to understand and know who the companies are that I'm investing in, and mine might be the best one.
Yes. And, you know, I think Mark Cuban models this on Shark Tank because he's sitting there in cash and he sits there and he asks very poignant questions to the participants And because he wants to decide if he wants to partner with this particular person, and he's now in control, or at least somewhat control, because they always offer, you know, I'll offer you this amount of money for 30% control of the company, or 50% control, or 70% control, whatever they offer them. And then now Mark Cuban and his people that he puts in control of these companies, he actually knows these people. He knows what they're trying to accomplish. He knows what he wants to try to accomplish, instead of taking his money and putting it in somewhere else where he doesn't have a personal relationship necessarily with the people that are running the company. So I think that's a very powerful thing when you read in this article that he has 50% of his money in cash on the sideline.
That's awesome. And again, as we talk about always modeling the successful few, if we look at what he's actually doing, he's modeling, I have cash available to seize these opportunities. He would not be able to invest in the businesses on Shark Tank that he deems worthy of his investment if he did not have that cash available. So he had to make a personal conscious decision to build and store that liquid cash. And then he's very selective about how he deploys that, not just into any opportunity, but he really waits to see the right one that's best for him.
And then the final one that we wanted to talk about today is the Wall Street Journal article on the super rich sit on too much cash, UBS report says. And for our listeners, I think when I was reading this, it's basically the Swiss bank UBS, which is one of the world's largest, if not the largest wealth manager, issued a report and said that investors with at least $30 million in investable assets tend to maintain high cash allocations, often in the region of 35%. So a person has $30 million of investable assets, and on average, they're reporting that they're keeping 35% of that in cash. And what I want our listeners to understand is, when you're reading things like this, whether it's about the Wall Street Journal talking about UBS, or whether it's Mark Cuban or Susie Orman, or whether it's Bruce and Rachel on this podcast, what you really need to do is say, why are these people reporting this in the first place? Or why are they giving you this information in the first place? So UBS, in my opinion, make their money off the investable assets. They don't make money in the cash position. They could make a small percentage if it's in a money market position, but it's very minute compared to whether it's going to be an investable. Mm-hmm. So you have to say to yourself, are the people from UBS saying this to the investors, that you have too much money in cash, because they truly believe that they are helping their people build their net worth? Or are they saying this to get more of that money to move into investable assets, thus helping UBS's bottom line? And that's what the first thing that I took away from this article as I was reading it, is I remind all of my clients, and I'm reminding the podcasters right now, listeners, to say, when somebody says something, you have to ask, why are they saying that? What's in it for them? You and I decided to do this podcast because we wanted to build value into people's lives, because you and I see this on a daily basis, where the confusion of people of what to do with their money, and they're often influenced to put it into places where they lose control.
Absolutely.
Then we were hoping to build a following, and a following then would actually look for more and more value from us and be willing to pay us for that extra value. So, you know, we do have the ability to earn livings here in the United States, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with money. But you have to always, I believe, in your mindset, ask people when you're reading it, and not just take it as a blind concrete statement. Oh yeah, well, if UBS is the largest wealth manager in the world and they say that 35% of your money in cash is too much, well, then they must be right and I need to invest more.
Right. And And I really appreciate you bringing that out into the light, Bruce. And I think the other thing that I hear behind this is almost like if you read the undercurrent behind what they said, not just their perspective, but oh my goodness, the ultra wealthy who have at least 30 million in investable assets are putting 35% of their total portfolio in cash. So if we then look at it from the perspective of why are those people who have 30 million in investable assets, why are they putting so much of that capital in cash? And what can we learn to model that they're doing? Even if UBS, United Bank of, United Bank of Switzerland stands for, even if United Bank of Switzerland has a perspective that that's too much, there is still a very important reason why those ultra wealthy are choosing that model at this time and putting 35% of their portfolio in cash. So many of those reasons are some of the things that we've been talking about here that build the confidence and peace of mind, that give them the clarity, that allow them then to take advantage of opportunities that do align with their investor DNA. And so as we want to model the wealthy, not just what the wealthy are told to do, we want to model the wealthy. Let's seek to really understand and look at it almost as a behind the scenes look at what the wealthy are actually doing.
Absolutely. You know, when we look at all the things we're talking about today, it really depends on when you're listening to us, it depends on what you're going to take out of it, on what your why is, what you're trying to accomplish, not only personally, but with your family. So example, my why is to always stay in control of my money because I would like to continue to grow my business so I can serve as many clients as possible. And that means actually having money to control to do podcasts like this, to expand to video, to expand to video conferences, to expand to more people behind the scenes that actually service my clients, to actually look to buy other businesses, which I have a couple of business brokers out looking for other businesses right now for me to do. Other people, their why may be that's not in my DNA to become a business owner. They just want to go work for somebody, get a W-2. And so they have to then say, what is my why as far as going forward? Do I want to work for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, and then retire? Or do I want to work for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, and then work part-time? Or do I never want to retire? Do I want to continue to work? Why also am I doing it for my family? Am I doing it to try to make them independently, not wealthy, but independently, not dependent upon somebody else, but see the value in the money that we have created as a family and then pass that down to the next generation. Do you want to do charitable work? Do you want to do charitable work physically, or do you want to as far as volunteering your time, or do you want to actually have a legacy to give money to different types of charities? So everything we're talking about is not a blanket statement for one person, but it's a thinking exercise for people to start to figure out what their why is.
Bruce, that's fantastic. And I think really the angle that Bruce and I both come from is we're both business owners, business builders. I personally want to build myself to the position of financial freedom, have assets that are producing cash flow, and that I'm not just having all of my income dependent on my job. And I want to be able to enjoy life with my family and live to the fullest. And I want to be able to continue working through my entire life and building this knowledge and wisdom in the lives of other people so that they can also keep in control more of their money. And so that's a lot of, you're kind of hearing some of the same things in Bruce and I's language. And that's why we make the decisions financially that we do and why we think it's really valuable as well to make sure you have as much as possible that you are keeping and controlling so that you can put that to the most effective use to accomplish your goals. In this whole conversation about what our why is and why we want to have our money working for us, we really want to help you think through what you can actually do to prove to yourself that this works and to really be able to put yourself in a position where you're taking one step forward in your own personal financial life and beginning to see the traction and the results. So if this podcast and some of the things that we've been talking about keeping and controlling your money, having cash, being in that position where cash is king, so you have the liquidity to seize opportunities. We're going to kind of wind that all the way back to the very beginning. And one of the first steps is that you can become aware of your cash flow in your own personal and business financial life. And the reason for this is not just so that you can lock yourself into a strict budget and be really frustrated because that's a challenging position to be in. Bruce and I don't really like budgeting anyways, but we want to really have this ultimate goal of saying, how can we free up more of our monthly cash flow into a position where it's not being used for expenses so that we can have more money that's going into savings and increase our net investable income, starting with whatever financial position we currently find ourselves in. And so we're going to walk you through. I want Bruce to share a little bit about what you do with a cash flow awareness exercise for your clients as you're working with them. We just want to give you some action steps that you can take in your own personal life without talking to one of us or without having to go see anyone personally. You can just begin to start taking these steps forward in your own life and apply them.
Yes, Rachel, what it comes down to is awareness. I'm amazed how people aren't aware of a lot of aspects of their lives. You can walk into any mall in the United States. You can walk down the street, and people aren't even aware of the space that they're taking up and actually blocking people from getting to one point to another. I don't think people are aware of things very much. It's a skill that hasn't been necessarily fostered, because we have actually been, I believe with all our media now, we've actually been fostered to just try to react to what people tell us to do instead of being aware of our surroundings. We used to learn by trying things. Now we learn by reading our people telling us what we should do. So what we do with our clients is we have a cash flow awareness exercise. We do not like, as you mentioned earlier, we do not like the word budget, because budget actually gives a mindset of doing an exercise to determine what you cannot have. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to put money here. I'm going to put money here. I'm spending money here. I'm spending money here, because I don't want to spend it there so that I can't have it here, so I can have it over there. We prefer to have a more positive attitude and say, we just want you to be aware of where your money is actually flowing. And in order to do that, you are going to have to have a system in place. Now, people learn differently. Some people learn visually, and some people learn kinesthetically or tactile. Ways where they have to actually feel it. That's why some people like to read books on Kindle, and some people like to read actual physical books where they can change the page. And so in our cash flow awareness, we have two different types. We have a sheet that talks about fixed expenses, and fixed expenses, you know, would be either your rent or your mortgage, car payments, utilities if you have them fixed, your car insurance, anything that it's the same amount every month. And then on the other side, we have variable expenses. And variable expenses, obviously, are things that vary every month, which could be clothing, it could be entertainment, it could be vacation, it could be gifts that you give. And we actually have people write those down. Now, one of the things that we caution people all the time is to not make this a painful experience. So some people immediately want to get out their checkbook, they want to get out their bank statements, and they want to write all those down. If that is fine with them and they don't get stressed out by doing that, then they should do it that way. But if they kind of roll their eyes right away and they say, oh, I hate going through my bank account, then I just say to them, okay, don't go through your bank account. What do you think you spend on coffee every morning? What do you think you spend on gasoline? What do you think you do? And so then we add up the fixed expenses and the variable expenses. Then we take their income and we change it if it's a weekly, a biweekly, or semi-monthly. We always change it into a monthly amount. Then we subtract the expenses out of there, and we look at and see if there's a surplus. Now, what's interesting is a lot of times there's a surplus, and a lot of times there's a surplus in the 20 to 25% range. And what people find quickly is, because I normally circle that number, and I say, okay, it looks like you have between $1,000 and $1,200 a month surplus. So where does that surplus go? And Rachel, some of our listeners are probably thinking what I'm going to say next is people say, well, I don't have any money left at the end of the month. So what happens then is they're not aware where their money's going. They have no awareness. And because I say, well, that $1,200, is that what's building up this savings account over here? And they say, no, that was my tax return.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have absolutely no awareness of where their money's going. So then I say to them, what we want you to do is not budget so that you can't have anything, but we want you to become more aware where your money's going so you can consciously decide if that's where you want to spend your money or not. Now, other people who are more visual learners, they like to use things like Mint.com, which I know you have a lot more experience with. We have another type, but Mint.com. You want to tell the listeners a little bit about Mint.com?
Yeah, so I use the same exercise for cash flow awareness with my clients, and it's something that I do personally with my husband as well. So I can't say I'm perfectly religious on this. We have a goal to have a weekly meeting where we sit down and look at our Mint.com for the week. I can say Lucas does it very religiously, and I join in that meeting a little bit less frequently. But what we're looking at, we've linked all of our credit card statements and all of our bank account information to Mint.com. It's a free online software tool that you can use. And what happens is all of your transactions get automatically categorized. So if you shop at what looks like a grocery store, they'll put that in your grocery budget and so on and so forth. And you can look at what your money is being spent in various categories and the overall total amount of that at the end of the month. So we'll go in each month and re-change some of the categories. Maybe it really wasn't a grocery bill. Maybe it was gas. And so we'll adjust that. And then we'll look each week and say, where are we trending for the month? Is this a high month or a low month of spending? And that just helps us become a lot more aware. So again, it's just one way. It's not the end-all be-all way, but it is a way to be able to say, well, I thought we spent, you know, $400 a month in groceries, but really it's more like $600. That's a way to be able to catch those things where sometimes if we're just not aware, we have losses and leaks that are going out of our control in terms of our spending. And it's not even necessarily that it's a problem that we're spending that money there. It's just that we want to be aware of where are we spending our dollars and is this in alignment with my value system? If I'm just spending money because it's convenient, maybe convenience is my value, maybe not. We just really want to be able to make sure that our spending is aligned with our value system. That's what's going to make you feel better and sleep better at night and also become aware of the places you're spending money that's not in that congruence with your value system and be able to then direct more to a surplus or more to savings.
Yeah, and I think when you change from budgeting to a sense of awareness, it frees people up to actually do these kind of exercises.
Absolutely. And I want to point at this point, I want to go ahead and point you to a video that goes a little bit more in depth on this. If you want some more information on doing a cash flow awareness exercise, it's a little bit more of help for the person who says, well, what do I do with those strange budget items like Christmas shopping or birthdays? They only occur every now and then. And I want to figure out how do I handle that in the midst of my overall cash flow awareness and make sure that those things don't come up as surprises or I feel bad about spending for them when they do arise. So that video will be a link on the show notes and that will also be on the website. And I want to just really kind of share with you then big picture where we're going with this episode series. So as we're working through this series on savings, we've really started with our why. And if you're on board with your why, then, and you have a big enough why, then that allows you to be able to figure out and solve the how and the what. And that's the order that Simon Sinek talks about in his book, Start With Why. So we want you to have a big why around why you're saving money. And if so, then you're going to want to follow us in the next couple episodes. We're going to be talking about the how and the what of savings. So in the next episode, it's going to be called How the Wealthy Manage Cash, Part 1. We're going to talk through some of the theory and ideas and philosophy around how to save money. We're going to talk about some of the natural laws that you have to overcome in order to save, the importance of tracking your money as a first step. We'll go a little bit more in depth than we did today. The pay yourself first principle that you may have heard of, and really why it's important to prioritize increasing your net investable income over maximizing returns. So we look forward to sharing this episode with you next time.
Yeah, and so if anybody has additional questions, they could go to www.themoneyadvantage.com and you can subscribe to this podcast. You can join the Money Advantage community where you'll get emails about podcasts, blogs, videos, and any other tools that we think will be helpful to you. From our website, you can also find and follow us on social media such as Facebook and YouTube.
And if you had any particular questions about anything we discussed today or any other concept that you've heard us hint at or mention and you really want more information, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach out directly to Bruce and I at hello@themoneyadvantage.com. That email address is available to both of us. You can share your thoughts, your feedback, or any particular questions. You can also request a free financial picture consultation to help you with what Bruce shared at the very beginning of that exercise to think through the purpose of your money. And so really what we're doing with that is helping you discover dollars flowing into and out of your control, strategizing ways to get more of your money flowing back into your control. So the end result is that you have more money to retain and utilize during your life today, and also having more wealth to pass on generationally. That is a free conversation that we want to make available to you.
And finally, we know you have guys have taken time out of your day to listen to this podcast. So we'd really like to say how much we appreciate you listening. And we hope you found this educational, empowering, and I'm confident it's going to add value to your life and business.
Absolutely. And again, this is Bruce and Rachel. Special thanks to you, our listeners. And until next time, success leaves clues. So model the successful few and not the crowd, and build a life and business you love. To learn how high-performing entrepreneurs 10x or more returns on liquid capital without giving up quick access to cash, go to themoneyadvantage.com/liquid-capital to get The Unfair Advantage, your 20-minute easy-to-read guide on maximizing your savings.
Thank you for listening to the Money Advantage Podcast. Today's show notes and resources are available for you on themoneyadvantage.com. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe and leave a review. If you have any questions or desire to speak with a qualified financial professional after listening to today's podcast, we encourage you to reach out to us at hello@themoneyadvantage.com or check us out at themoneyadvantage.com. The opinions and views expressed here are for informational purposes only. This material is educational in nature and should not be deemed as a solicitation of any specific product or service. All investments involve risk and a potential loss of principal. Kalos Capital Incorporated nor Kalos Management Incorporated offer tax or legal advice. Please consult with a tax advisor or attorney for advice regarding the impact on your portfolio. Securities offered through Kalos Capital Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC, MSRB, and investment advisory services offered through Kalos Management Incorporated and registered investment advisor, both located at 11525 Parkwood Circle, Alpharetta, Georgia. E3 Consultants Group is not an affiliate or subsidiary of Kalos Capital Incorporated or Kalos Management Incorporated.